This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Democrats do well in cities, Republicans in the countryside, and that's not great for democracy.
This problem of geographic polarization, I think, is something that everyone should care about.
Cal Muniz talks about his new report, Gone Country, why Democrats need to play in rural America and how they can do it again. Plus, humans aren't the only ones getting down because of the pandemic. Their pets have their own anxieties. The latest episode of WGLT's McHistory profiles a Bloomington Normal leader of the women's suffrage movement, and a new photography exhibit from Carl Smith helps you look at the detritus of living with diabetes.
All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Illinois has received $92 million from the American Rescue Plan to help those struggling with mental health problems or battling substance abuse. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says the U.S. was already in the midst of its worst drug overdose crisis in history, even before the pandemic.
And we were witnessing skyrocketing rates of suicide. But COVID-19 has made these epidemics worse. These epidemics feed on isolation and despair and reduction in essential services.
The funding will go to community mental health providers throughout the state. Durbin says he expects Illinois will get additional money to help schools and other organizations provide mental health treatment and counseling for children. Republican lawmakers in Springfield are again complaining they're being steamrolled by Democrats who hold supermajorities in the legislature and control the governor's office. The latest blow-up from the GOP came as the Illinois House worked till nearly midnight ahead of a Friday deadline. Republicans in the Illinois House accused Democrats of not living up to promises from January when longtime House Speaker Mike Madigan was ousted by those in his own party. Democrats instead elected new House Speaker Chris Welch, who promised a new day in Springfield. 3 months later, GOP Representative Tim Butler of Springfield says his party's ideas are still getting blocked for purely political reasons.
We represent 5 million Illinoisans on this side of the aisle. 5 million! And our bills are being ignored. I'm sick of it!
Butler threw a calendar across the House floor in frustration as he called on Democrats to release a bill he says already has plenty of votes from the other side of the aisle. Today is the deadline for legislation to move out of the House or Senate or not see the light of day. Children and young adults are driving up coronavirus cases in McLean County. Data from the McLean County Health Department show over half of the more than 450 confirmed and probable coronavirus cases reported this week are from people under the age of 30. Those in their 20s had the most cases. McLean County set a new record for COVID hospitalizations for the fourth day in a row with 59. The county announced 71 new coronavirus cases. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Gina Barnhart.
But the ones I have now feel like they're like bionic ears, because like if I'm in a restaurant and there's background noise, I can adjust those so that they just go a certain way.
Gina's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Democrats have chipped away at the Republican majority on the McLean County Board in the last two election cycles, but they have struggled to win countywide, and Republicans still hold all state House and Senate seats. To change that, Democrats may have to perform better with voters who live outside Bloomington Normal. In this episode of the Heartland Politics podcast, host Robin Johnson talks to author Cal Muniz about his new report, Gone Country, Why Democrats Need to Play in Rural America and How They Can Do It Again.
This problem has been growing, and especially severe now, this problem of essentially, right, insularity within Democratic circles. And we see this, it's particularly, I think, problematic and pronounced nationally, but I think we see this even within the states. Most of the people who have a lot of clout in these circles, in these Democratic circles, even in rural states like ours, come from sort of urban backgrounds and relatively urban backgrounds. And I think that's part of why Democrats, both nationally as well as within these states, have struggled sort of connecting with voters, rural voters, increasingly.
And you spell out in the report, along with your co-author, Robert Saldine, who's a political science professor at University of Montana, why this is important, not just for Democrats to do better in rural areas, but you also say it's important for Republicans to do better in urban areas.
Yeah, this problem of geographic polarization, I think, is something that everyone should care about. You know, on the one hand, people should care about it, I think, just based on their own partisan interests. If you're a Democrat, geographic polarization along the urban-rural lines means that it's very difficult for you to translate your party's national majorities into governing majorities, right? This is a big issue. This is partially due to the U.S. Senate, but it extends beyond that as well. And we have to, remember that, there are 50 states out there. And, wouldn't it be, if you're a Democrat, wouldn't it be nice if there weren't so many Republican trifecta states, right, where Republicans control the upper and lower chambers of the legislature, as well as the governor's mansion, right? And Democrats' ability to perform better in the states would go a long way because, state politics is often where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, with policy.
When you talk about the nationalization of politics and, maybe define that, give an example, and haven't we always had that to some degree in our country?
There are lots of different ways, I think, that we could say that American politics is nationalized recently. We've seen nationalization in terms of electoral behavior, right? And I that's what I focus on mostly in the report with Professor Saldine. And we can talk about examples of that. There's nationalization of campaign spending. A lot of the spending that occurs in these what should be either statewide or local races, right? You would imagine that most of the spending would be either coming from within those states or from those communities. Well, now a lot of the spending in those races is coming, from all over the country. And so that's potentially problematic. We've also seen the nationalization of partisan agendas, state party agenda. And so, increasingly the state party platform in, say, Iowa, right, is more strikingly similar to the state party platform in a state like Colorado than Colorado or California or all across the country than it ever has been.
The local Republicans don't seem to want to run away from their national party as much as Democrats do. Is that a fair characterization? I mean, I hear a lot that local Democrats who may be a little more to the center don't want to be associated with the national party, but yet the Republicans are constantly trying to do that. Whereas on the Democratic side, it seems like, when you look at the Republicans, that they're not trying as much to keep their national party at arm's length. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah. So, Robin, I think that's a totally fair characterization. I think it's 100% true, that there is a clear asymmetry. I think that's largely a political geography story, right? It's just Republican voters are, given the current urban-rural divide and how nationalization plays into this, Republicans are less incentivized to try to do something about it because, right, nationalization is helping Republicans maintain competitiveness, particularly, in the U.S. Senate, right, despite having a national minority of voters. And so at this point, there just isn't as much incentive for Republicans to localize their politics because, in fact, arguably, nationalization has played into the Republican Party's hands quite well.
What are some things you see that Democrats should be able to do to better compete in rural areas?
Sure. So I think things that the Democrats can do, there's a sort of several pieces to this. And the first and probably the most obvious is that, you know, the Democrats need to be permissive of heterodoxy on cultural issues that serve, right, as these sort of threshold issues in rural communities. And these, you know, things are like guns, right? It should be okay for a rural Democrat to not have strict gun control policy beliefs. And, you know, if that makes sense for the community that he or she is serving to represent. And likewise, in other parts of rural America, issues like abortion, the Democrats should be permissive of a little bit of, again, you know, sort of heterodoxy on these sorts of issues that serve as, you know, just these overwhelmingly sort of symbolically powerful cultural signifier.
That's author Cal Muniz speaking with Heartland Politics podcast host Robin Johnson. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. Tensions are high during the pandemic, and not just for people. Dogs pick up on stress and anxiety, and that can lead to aggressive behavior. Dana Vollmer talks with State Farm's Heather Paul about a spike in dog bite and injury claims over the last year.
Illinois is ranked number 2 for State Farm for dog-related injury claims. Last year we paid over $12.6 million for those claims, and that could be a dog bite or it could be an injury where a person is knocked down. But one of the trends that flew off the report was in March of 2020, just at the height of when everybody was going on COVID lockdown, we saw a dramatic increase of 115% in the amount paid for dog-related injury claims. It was clear that dogs were picking up on our anxiety, and we were also, in a sense, invading their space. Our dogs and pets that are used to us being gone for the day where they can have quiet time, suddenly they had to live with us 24/7. And that can be a little nerve-wracking for our pets. And unfortunately, some of them reacted by biting or possibly even injuring someone in the home.
Did that get any better with time? Did pets, like their humans, just kind of adjust to this new normal?
It changed as things mellowed out. We got a little more comfortable with operating out of our homes, so do our pets. But now what we're concerned about and others in the industry are, as we transition back into a normal post-COVID life where kids are going back into the school, we may be going back into the workplace, we're venturing out more, our pets who have gotten used to us being at home are now going to be left alone. And so there are instances of separation anxiety where dogs can exhibit anxiety and stressful behavior, and they may bite, they could destroy property, or the other concern is all of those pandemic pets, all of those pets that we adopted or fostered during the lockdown may potentially have issues now with socialization. They have been at home, they haven't been out and about with meeting other people and other dogs, and so we don't want to rush them.
When people got their quarantine pets, they may not have realized how much work it would be to train them or what kinds of personalities they'd be inheriting through a rescue. How much of a factor are these quarantine pets in the numbers you're seeing?
Well, we don't exactly know the answer to that because we don't ask, you know, when a claim or a situation is filed, we don't necessarily know, is this a dog that was in the home already or a new pet? But you're absolutely right. When we went into lockdown, we had a lot more time at home. For many people, they were lonely, so they went out and they had time for a pet. Unfortunately, now that maybe they're going to have less time or they're seeing behavioral changes in their dog, those new pet owners may not be giving the time to really understand and help their pet adjust. And so shelters and rescues are already seeing a spike in the number of pets returned. And it's no fault of the pet. They unfortunately just are behaving in a way that shows they're not comfortable with the certain situation or what is happening in the home. And we have new pet owners that don't really understand what they need to be doing to help that pet.
What kinds of insurance policies can people have in place to protect themselves and their pet?
At State Farm, we do not have a breed restriction policy. So we don't ask or factor in what type of dog you have. Instead, we want to focus on education about responsible pet ownership. Everything from walking your dog on a leash, understanding and recognizing your dog's body language and changes where your dog is seeing that they're not comfortable, but also talking to your insurance agent about what are the policy limits on your homeowner's or renter's insurance. So it could be anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000. So anything above that amount comes out of your pocket. And we definitely recommend considering getting an additional personal liability policy. That extends that coverage up to several million dollars, depending on how much you want to have covered. One of the reasons we're seeing an increase in the amount paid for dog-related injury claims is because of rising costs of health care. But we also see more and more people that are suing to cover the cost of their expenses, and that can get very expensive.
I think some people carry shame around their dog's bad behavior and may not be willing to kind of take the step and admit it's a problem. What would you say to encourage them?
You know, our pets, we have pets because of the companionship that they bring us, the joy that they bring us, and they look to us to help keep them safe and to recognize when they're not comfortable. Definitely consider having a conversation with your pet. And by having a conversation, I mean understanding their changes in how their body language or vocalization is, to know if they're not comfortable, if your dog just doesn't act like, hey, it doesn't seem to want to be petted or be out in public, don't. Don't put your dog into a situation where it could potentially injure someone. We want to set up our pets to be successful and not fail.
That's State Farm's Heather Paul speaking with Dana Vollmer. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The passage of the 1913 Illinois Suffrage Act gave women of Illinois the right to vote for the President of the United States. This happened 6 years before the 19th Amendment was passed, giving women across the country the right to vote. During this episode of McHistory, meet Florence May Reeser Funk of Bloomington, who had a major role in this.
Women of Illinois will have their first opportunity to vote for presidential electors in November.
This is Bill Kemp, librarian, McLean County Museum of History.
This is Diane Walker.
Florence May Reeser Funk is certainly one of the more interesting individuals in the early 20th century in Twin Cities history. She was born in 1871 in Bloomington, but at the age of six, her father, Abraham Reeser, moved the family to Chicago, but then returned to the Prairie State, and in 1895 married Frank H. Funk of Bloomington, whom she had known since childhood.
They say that the old-time Republicans are again in charge of affairs. I declare that the progressive Republicans are at the helm.
So the newly married couple, they established a home on the 900 block of North McLean Street on the east side of Franklin Park in Bloomington. Florence Reeser Funk and her husband, Frank Funk, both were committed progressives.
They asked us to come into their ranks, and we were pleased to accept the invitation because we, as progressives, knew that the leaders believed in progressive principles.
Florence Funk was also active in the suffrage movement locally and statewide and played a role in passage in 1913 of what's known as the Illinois Suffrage Act.
Women of Illinois will have their first opportunity to vote for presidential electors in November.
Even before passage of the 19th Amendment, giving women across the nation the constitutional right to vote, in 1913, women in Illinois could vote for the U.S. president.
There are 1 million women voters in the state, and they are in a position to determine the result of the coming election.
It was the first state east of the Mississippi to give women that right, but they still could not vote for most offices. And then the next year, 1917, when the United States entered World War I, she played an instrumental role in organizing home front activities. And these women in town had so much to offer the community, and World War I unleashed that potential. Women such as Funk, it was said, were, quote, were as truly and as usefully in the service of their country during the war as were those who bore official titles or wore the nation's uniform.
It takes no longer for a woman to register and to vote than it does to buy a loaf of bread.
She passed away in the fall of 1923 at the young age of 51. At her death, she was remembered as a, quote, woman of liberal culture, energetic nature, of comprehensive views on all questions of public interest, and possessed of a large and sympathetic heart.
This episode of McHistory was produced by WGLT's Ariel Jones and featured Bill Kemp of the McLean County Museum of History and Diane Walker, who also portrayed Florence May Reeser Funk in the McLean County Museum of History virtual Evergreen Cemetery Walk. You're listening to Sound Ideas on Bloomington Normal's Public Media. With just under 5% of Americans living with type 1 diabetes, photographer Carl Smith says his condition is a nearly invisible one. In his current exhibit at the McLean County Arts Center, Smith turns his camera on the heaping piles of physical and emotional stuff that accompanied living with the disease. Arts correspondent Brianna Groh has more.
In Punctuation, 35 Years of Diabetic Debris, on display now through June 4th at the McLean County Arts Center, photographer Carl Smith documents life as a type 1 diabetic, from diagnosis at age 15 to organ transplant at age 50. Smith took the first photo in 1990 as a photography student at Illinois Wesleyan University.
I've got all these, you know, syringe caps lined up in rows, rows after rows after rows. I was using a particular type of camera that I was experimenting with where it would get these extreme depth of field. I was thinking it would have that pattern similar to the headstones at Arlington National Cemetery.
Smith says he didn't give much thought to the significance of the subject matter until others began to react to the photo.
They'd be, are those candles? No, those are candles. They're the caps on a syringe. And all of them were used by me. And they go, wow. And you start going, oh, well, yeah, people don't realize the sheer number.
That's a major theme in the series, the sheer number of injections, for example.
I've calculated that I've given myself over 22,000 shots in my lifetime. Those are just the insulin shots that I've given myself.
In The Eyes Have It, Smith is buried up to his eyes, literally, in pen needles. He says there were certainly times he felt buried by the weight of his disease. The cost to pay for insulin and supplies has been a major setback.
People that I would work with who just bought their new car or put a down payment on a house, and I go, yeah, I'm paying every month to feed my disease the cost of a mortgage. I could have bought a house for the price of my disease.
Then there's the weight on his conscience when he thinks about all the stuff it took to manage his disease.
None of this stuff is recyclable, which kind of distresses me because, you know, 99% of it is plastic. So, you know, 22,000 shots, 22,000 syringes, they all go into a landfill.
Smith is also blind in his left eye and has significantly reduced vision in his right eye, the result of diabetic retinopathy. It's just one of the ways diabetes has changed Smith's life forever.
Diabetic neuropathy, I have problems feeling with my feet. Diabetic nephropathy is damage to my kidneys. And after enough time, then I needed to have a kidney transplant. And if I didn't get the transplant, I would have ended up on dialysis.
Smith also received a pancreas along with his new kidney, allowing him to produce his own insulin for the first time in decades. By that time, Smith had gone from using syringes to insulin pens to an insulin pump. The device appears in a photo titled Marriage of Convenience. The device not only fed a constant stream of insulin into his bloodstream, but also sensed when his blood glucose was on the rise or headed for a low.
It would cause alarms to go off on your insulin pump going, hey, your blood sugar's dropping. Hey, your blood sugar's going up. Hey, hey, hey. So, you know, my wife and I had this joke about, you know, your other wife is bothering you. She needs some attention.
Smith took the companion photo to Marriage of Convenience after his transplant. In Divorce, a scar and staples mark the place where the insulin pump once traversed his flesh. Smith says, all in all, life is good now. The daily injections have been replaced by medications. He can drink a beer, eat a slice of cake, vacation with his family without worry. Smith says he wants to use this latest exhibition to raise awareness of what it takes to live with any chronic disease.
It's not just type 1 diabetes that has all of these materials or whatever it is. Whether it is simply the cost of medication or if it's the cost of materials, it runs the gamut.
Those costs are especially burdensome for those without insurance or affordable care.
Do I eat tonight? Do I go get my medicine tonight? You know, which one do I do? When you are in the lower end of the pay scale, these are kind of the choices you make.
Carl Smith's photos are on display now through June 4th in the Dolan Gallery at the McLean County Arts Center in Bloomington. I'm Brianna Groh.
A photography book of the complete series of more than 40 of Smith's works will also be available for viewing at the exhibition. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. Thanks to everyone for contributing during the WGLT Fund Drive this week. If you haven't done so yet, you can still make a donation at WGLT.org.